This is a Research in Practice podcast, supporting evidence-informed practice with children and families, young people and adults.
Hi, I'm Gary Davies, and I'm currently working for Somerset Council, assisting them in implementing work that I developed in Bristol City Council of a single digital view for children and families, and also some work for the Department for Education in supporting 12 local authorities around the country to develop their approach to the same sort of product.
Thanks, Gary. Great to have you here today. Could you describe for us a little bit about Somerset's single digital view of the child, bearing in mind that our audience is not particularly technically minded, and just describe the basic functionality and what it does and how it serves children and families and social workers?
Yeah, certainly. People typically call this a single digital view, but it's basically extracting useful information from computer systems or case management systems that include risk and vulnerability factors for children and families and the family network. And it brings that information from those computer systems to a single place, where it then is presented in an easy to use, attractive way for operational staff. And where the benefits of that come is that it reduces the retrieval burden for staff. It eliminates the need for them to access a range of disparate systems by providing a more complex picture of the issues and risks that families are facing. And that helps to improve assessments. It helps to improve decision making, and in particular links lead professionals to improve coordination while families are being worked with.
So there are a range of technical challenges that must be solved when developing a single view of the child, such as bringing data together from a variety of sources, as you've just described, and different data definitions coming from different organisations as well. Talk us through the steps that local authorities need to take to build a single view of the child. And what does that architecture look like? So what kind of technology are you using to build that platform?
The most important aspect is that it's user-led. So the requirements come from the professionals. The point of this product is to assist professionals to reduce their retrieval burden, strengthen their family working. So therefore, it is about identifying through those professionals what information they need in order to do their work more effectively. And that creates a user requirement list, which is typically, in this case, a set of data that comes from multiple systems. So what that's then telling you is, this is the information I need to gather into one place. So it then requires you to go to those computer systems with the assistance of data engineers, and they create the ability to take that information out of the back of those systems and bring it to a data platform. Now, they call that bringing the information, taking it through a pipeline. So you take the information, for instance, out of a case management system for children's social care, and you take it into a data platform. And a data platform is effectively a big bucket of data. So that is done many times from many different systems, and you end up with a big bucket of all the information that you think you need to create this visual of a child or family. So the next stage is for some data engineers to structure that information in a way that makes it able to be extracted. And to do that, one of the main functions is to match and merge the information. So the same child taking out of three systems has to be merged into one single set of record. So that is then carried out, the match and merge function. So that brings you structured information that has been merged so that you can see single children from multiple sources, and then that information has to be visualized. So most local authorities have Microsoft. In fact, it's about 97% of local authorities have Microsoft. So quite typically, the Microsoft products are used to do much of this work. And they've got a toolkit, which they call Fabric, and the engineers will use that toolkit to do all this behind the scenes work. The visualization is another product that's very typical across all local authorities, which is Power BI. And that's a dashboard. Part of the secret of this is listening to the user about how they want that dashboard designed, because they often don't want a lot of complexity. They want it very simple information presented in an easy to read format in a situation where they can't break the system. They just want to look at it, see what they need. And that's where the art of creating a very good dashboard is, in trying to keep it simple. So all of that requires the local authority to bring a project together, really. Most of this is built in-house relatively cheaply, because it's using existing staff with existing computer software equipment that's already available to the local authority.
And it sounds like information governance is a significant part of developing the platform. Could you describe for us the legal basis for sharing information in this way and the information governance processes that you follow as you begin that process?
Yes, definitely an important area. The general basis of the information governance, the lawful basis of it, is that within legislation, either explicitly or implicitly, various acts of Parliament require local authorities and other statutory partners and commission services to deliver services for the whole population. And those services are set out in that legislation. So, for instance, the Children's Act requires partners to work together to safeguard children, to provide economic situation where they can thrive, to improve health and well-being. The Education Act, get people to school, Crime and Disorder Act to reduce crime and disorder. And so what the basis is that in order for you to deliver those services to the whole population, it is reasonably necessary and proportionate for you to understand risk and vulnerability in the children and families in your area. And the absence of information is as important as the presence of information, because if you understand that a child that you've known for many years doesn't present with certain risks, then it assists you in your assessment and decision making of what's about to happen them. So the data protection procedure really captures that story, that in order to do the public tasks required, it is necessary to bring this information together under these pieces of legislation. And in order to do that, you have to have really four elements in place. One is an overarching information sharing agreement, which is strategic, which it sets out across the partnership that you're going to work together, that you've got these services to deliver, and you need to share information to do that. The next level is an information sharing agreement that sets out the granular detail of what you're sharing, why you're sharing, and how your arrangements are in place. The third is a data protection impact assessment, which tells you how you're going to manage the risks and the issues that emerge and what processing activities you're taking place and why you're doing it. And then fourthly is a public notice, a privacy notice on your website, telling the general public what it is you're doing with their information and why, so that they have transparency about what you're doing. And if you put those arrangements in place and follow the various guidance, you will know that you have robust and sound information governance arrangements to support a single digital view.
During my conversations around single view of the child, I've heard a number of myths emerge around the ethics of sharing information in this way. What are some of the myths that you have heard from stakeholders, and how do you respond to some of those myths?
Most people that you speak to actually think that local authorities and other agencies are more advanced than we really are in managing this information. So there is almost an element of surprise that we don't already do this, because they think we understand the lives of children and family better than we do. So that is one myth that is actually our inability to do some things that people think are obvious. I don't think there's any particular myth about doing this. I think that there is suspicion that we will do things that people don't want us to do. So concern about things like predictive analytics and algorithms and machine decision making and things like that. So a lot of the work is going on about being open, honest and transparent and explaining exactly what you do and making that information publicly available, going beyond what the legislation requires to try and create the best level of transparency that you can. Because actually the argument about why we should do this is extremely strong. You know, every child serious case review for the last 20 years has said that failure to share information has been a causal factor. Most people of reasonable mind would recognize that if people could understand risk that's held in different organizations and bring that picture together, would help you understand and protect children better. So the argument is quite fundamentally strong. The suspicions around doing other things.
Yeah, so we're not necessarily developing new rules for sharing information, are we? We're simply developing new and more efficient systems for doing something that we already do and could do better.
Yeah, most of the information, in fact, all of the information in the single digital view is information that's already shared across the partnership. This enables it to be done much more efficiently and creates a memory of that information, which otherwise has previously been lost. And also the simplicity of being able to see it all in one place.
And I imagine the time savings for social workers is one part of that argument as well. Social workers being able to focus on the function of social work rather than the process of social work.
So in Bristol, the single digital view is searched 60,000 times a year. And if you equated that to 10-minute saving, which is quite a modest saving, that equates to 10,000 hours of low-level retrieval burden that staff have saved. So it is quite surprising how much more efficient it is.
And is that 60,000 individual children or families, or is that could that be multiple searches for the same family as well?
It's 60,000 searches by a member of staff, a practitioner or a lead professional. So they could potentially look up a family a few weeks later or a few months later, and that would be the same family.
So that's quite a significant quantifiable time saving, isn't it? Okay, let's move on to the work that you're doing with DfE. So Somerset has been awarded a grant to work with 12 local authorities to assess their readiness to implement a single digital view of the child. Talk us through the work that you're doing in that space.
Yes, an opportunity came from Department for Education for local authorities to apply if they were interested in developing a single digital view and they would like some support or assistance to understand what that journey looked like. So 12 local authorities were selected, a broad range all across the country. And the work I'm doing with them really is selling the ambition of a single digital view to senior leaders who may not otherwise be as aware of it. It demonstrates the art of the possible, and the fact that it's been done in Bristol and Somerset shows what can be done and the way in which data and digital products can support family working. So part of the work is then to understand their current digital maturity. So what journey are they on and where have they reached on that journey, and carry out a bit of a gap analysis to understand what they would need to do if they wanted to introduce a single digital view. And then I'm going to write a report to them setting out some of the key issues, some of the considerations that they would need to give, and recommendations as to how they could move from where they are now to developing the single digital view. And whilst working with them, assisting them in taking their key stakeholders and partner agencies into the discussions about why organisations should work together more effectively in this space.
So what are some of the key learning points so far?
There's several actually that have emerged. One is that this is a piece of work that has a level of complexity, and it is a journey over time. And therefore, it appears to me that it's quite important that the local authority has a digital strategy that sets out that journey. it's a very iterative product. You can build information from your internal sources into a single digital view. You can then start to bring in information from partner organizations. You can develop the maturity of it. And in time, we will want to start to take advantage of artificial intelligence and other emerging technologies. So therefore, having it written down as a strategy with themes and prioritization and explaining to the organization how you're trying to develop those products seems to be a really important element of this. The second factor that seems to be equally as important is that it's a corporate digital platform. The future is going to be very much about data. And if you start to rely on these types of products and they become critical to operational services, then they need to be held by the organization. They need to be recognized by the organization as a key element of the working practices. They need to be maintained, kept up to date, developed. And if they do break for any reason, someone needs to maintain them and repair them and get them back operational. And the single digital view of children and families is one but product that comes from building this data architecture. And most organizations and many that I already talked to will want to do something similar with adults, with a single citizen view, or with revs and benefits or housing. And so therefore, it being a corporate data platform where the departments are customers of that platform. So for instance, children and families go to the digital platform and say, can I have these 26 sets of data because I want to build a dashboard about SEND or looked after children. And then they receive that data and build their dashboard. And that model seems to be one that's quite important for the future.
You touched on incorporating emerging technologies such as AI. Could you expand on that a little bit? How do you see AI being incorporated in the future and what function would it perform?
It's early in the journey with AI, and I don't think we can see the full potential, but you can see some emerging opportunities. The single digital view creates as it is at this moment in time, view of a child or family. You could imagine quite a complex search capability. So if you were to go in and start to ask complex questions about the child and family, about, you know, what relationship is there with drugs and alcohol in this family, and, you know, how has it presented itself, and get a complex answer to that type of scenario. Could you come in the morning as a family worker and the system has worked out what has happened overnight? What are the new priorities for that family? What's the recommended best practice to your action plan with that family? Can it prompt you into the most effective things that you could do? Other aspects of when you speak to children in the home, you know, if that's recorded on video or audio, the ability to bring that back and embed it in the system and immediately be able to summarize it and search it and access the whole level of information about that child and family to decide what levels of risk and vulnerability. You can see all sorts of different ways in which this can get developed. And I think some of it we haven't yet thought of.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential, isn't there? And we're doing a separate project on AI in terms of, the labour savings. So thinking about how we can reduce administrative burden for social workers. But then, you know, it's only a matter of time until we get into the predictive analytics space and rethinking opportunities for families to contribute to their own case file and access their own information, but also to connect to really important information as well. I think that AI has a lot of opportunity to bridge language and learning gaps and things like that. So there's certainly benefits to adopting it into practice. And I think we're in the same space as you, where we're thinking, you know, we can see the opportunities, but how do we do this responsibly and ethically and safely? And how should children and families be involved in that conversation and the development process? So just refocusing on the DfE scoping work, So part of the project is assessing a local authority's readiness to implement a single digital view of the child. What sort of conversations are you having in that space? What factors are you looking for? And what are some of the themes that are emerging there in terms of readiness?
I think one of the aspects that has slightly hindered some people is the Supporting Families Programme has provided an awful lot of work around data, digitalised products and transformational work. But many of the local authorities around the country have held onto that programme as the reason why they are sharing information. And it's trying to tell them a new narrative that actually they need to move past that programme. And obviously it's coming to an end now. When you actually say, why should you share information, it is to deliver your core function of safeguarding. And safeguarding includes early intervention, prevention, and the improvement of health and well-being. So the reason that information should be shared is to equip public services to do their job more effectively. And there's a lot of rewriting of that narrative for partner agencies, because the slight downside of the Supporting Families Programme is that some agencies see it as a method for the local authority to get money from the government, rather than that it might help to reduce demand for instance, the police. It might improve outcomes for families, which would then diminish the need to call on crisis services, which would then reduce demand and improve outcomes for families, but also outcomes for public services. So it's reselling that narrative as to why a single digital view facilitates interoperative working practices of different agencies. If you talk about safeguarding for nurses and hospitals, you know, if they can understand the context of which a family or a member of the family, a mum or a dad, is being discharged into back into their home or community, then they could put better provision in place. If a GP understands the nature of work going on with a family, he or she might work differently with them in terms of referrals. If the police understand the context of a young person and the challenges they're going through in their life because they're being worked with in two or three different ways because of other traumatic events in their life, they might respond differently. So it's trying to build a more mainstream narrative about why we should all work together.
There are a lot of moving parts to these projects, and it sounds like leadership is a really important component of that. Talk me through what leaders need to do to be able to bring together a project like this.
One of the interesting aspects of that I see across the country in children's senior leaders is a recognition that data and digital products have a role to play, but sometimes there's a lack of understanding about how digital products can assist family working, and a disconnect between the IT departments of local authorities and the senior leaders in children's services. And you can talk to the IT people who say, look, I can develop this type of capability, but it hasn't yet dawned on some of the senior leaders how they could shape that to create products that would really assist and strengthen their family working. And there's something about trying to bring those two skill sets, which are quite different because one's a people orientated and one's a data orientated or digital orientated, together to create some blue sky thinking.
And when you see that relationship working well, what does that look like? What characteristics can you draw out of that?
Quite typically, there ends up needing a sort of middle person who can bring those two skill sets together and almost translate between the two. You know, children's services managers obviously are very typically come from that profession, so they're people. They want families and children to talk about their experiences. They don't naturally turn to digital products. The data type people don't understand the life of family working, and so you end up almost with a communication barrier between the two skill sets. And A lot of local authorities have data and governance boards, but they're not strongly represented by children's services because they don't see them as particularly helpful to in a pressurised, prioritised environment. So the senior leaders often don't go to some of those meetings or don't play an active part. And the way the conversations play out in those meetings are too heavily digitalised or data-led to facilitate that sort of blue sky thinking about how the two could come together. So it's, I haven't entirely worked out what the best model is, but you can see that some connectivity needs to be developed that is different than what currently exists.
A shared vision and a way to bridge the expertise gap. And it's almost about developing a common language. In one sense, this is what we're working on in this project. So we're thinking about how we can actually join up these two things. So we're building on the maturity models that are out there. Some of the things that we're thinking about is when you actually start one of these projects, how do we apply that best practice that you know, that's well evidenced in implementation research and project management research, but how do we actually apply it to this thinking? And what are some of those characteristics that we can encourage people to develop to give these types of projects the best chance of surviving and doing what they intend to do?
Very often when you say to DCSs about a single digital view, they kind of don't really know what that is. And then you show them a version of it and they go, I want that. And it's that, because that language, single digital view, or whatever language you use to describe it, becomes like typical meaningless terms. They don't envisage it as a result of hearing about it. They've got no frame of reference to it. But when they see it as a product, they can immediately see the immense value that that would bring to staff, and then they're on board. But what then happens, they just want it delivered then. They don't want to have the, you know, the back office type arrangements that need to be put in place. So then you need the data people to take that task on.
Yeah, there are steps to be followed, aren't there? And I think one of the things that we're hoping to articulate as part of this process is, what do those steps actually look like? It's, you know, we can picture the product, people tend to want it, but where do we start? You know, it's not just a matter of going, oh yes, we're going to do that. There are a sequence of events that need to take place, and I guess that largely points to the work that you're doing with DfE, doesn't it? It's thinking about, what does that readiness actually look like?
Yes, no, as I alluded to earlier, though, you kind of end up selling the art of the possible. You know, you go into the partnership meetings and saying, this is the type of thing that we're talking about. This is what you could design in your local environment to your local strategic priorities. That's the direction. And very often the IT department is already heading in that direction because they know it's the way to go, but they don't really understand what the final product's going to look like.
Can you talk us through some of the challenges that you face with different data definitions across organizations and how you approach that challenge in terms of data matching and the technologies that you use to overcome that?
Data matching is obviously critical to the success of this type of work. And what that means is that the name and date of birth of a child in one system and the name and date of birth in a child of another system has to be matched together, and then those records merged. Now, simply, that's quite easy if it all is the same, but sometimes you get Freddie or Frederick or Fred and variations. And so you have to design some software that supports the merging of records that don't quite match. And they call that fuzzy matching. And fuzzy matching is a series of agreed principles as to what you will or won't merge. And fundamentally, if two records have got much or many different inaccuracies, you cannot merge those records. And it would be dangerous to do so in this context. So you have to agree at an acceptable point where you will allow records to merge. Now, the Ministry of Justice developed some software which is called Splink, And they've spent an awful lot of money and development time in creating this software to facilitate matching and merging. And a lot of local authorities now are turning to Splink because it's free of charge and it is works very well in this space. Quality of data is an issue that's raised by a lot of local authorities as a consequence, and a nervous concern about introducing a single digital view. A couple of things I would say about that. It hasn't played out in the real world. So when we have matched the data quality has actually, in several organizations, proved to be perfectly acceptable. And it's never foolproof, but it does not bring out the issues that you might concern yourself about. Secondly, there is some experience that by socializing the information, it makes the person who inputs the data realize the importance of the data, and they are keeping better and more accurate inputting of data. And if the data is improved or updated, then it comes through every day as the systems are updated. So you get that improved data. So you're matching and merging. If a date of birth in, say, the school system is made to be correct, then as that comes through overnight, it will now then match with the existing record of the child in the other way. So you do kind of, as you improve your quality, you improve the single digital view as well.
Great, thank you. Talk us through the strategic benefits of having a single digital view of the child.
There are a lot of practical benefits that has been described, but strategically what you are allowing is a better understanding the impact or difference that services can make. Having this information all in one place also allows you to manage your services more effectively, because you can better cope with the demand. You can allocate resources more effectively because you understand risk and vulnerability better than you did before. And obviously for leaders or commissioners, you've got access to more information, so you can better understand the social issues that will perhaps support the creation of a strategy document or the commissioning of services out in the community. Because once you've got that information in your single digital view, you can analyze it. So you can understand trends or patterns or geographical areas. You can layer information on top of other information to do risk stratification. You can work out where demand is in your town or city or area. So there are a lot of strategic aspects that create better outcomes for you.
In the work that you're doing with DfE, do you have a set of outcomes that you're working to, or have you articulated outcomes in relation to developing a single view of the child?
The outcomes for this piece of work really are enabling the local authority to understand its journey better and to take advantage of the learnings that I've had over the years of trying to introduce this type of system. You will see in the national legislation is being drawn up now to have a duty to share information. There's a lot of work going on about a unique identifier for children. There is a lot of work in the government documents that describes frictionless information sharing and multi-agency information sharing coming together more seamlessly. And I think a single digital view is seen as a requirement for effective safeguarding. It wouldn't surprise me now to see more regulators either requiring it or seeking out the direction of travel that partner agencies have in regard improving their understanding of the lives of children.
Could you expand a bit on the duty to share information? How does that build on the existing statutory requirements?
Government are putting in place legislation to place a duty for people to share information relating to safeguarding. And I obviously haven't seen the full detail of this yet, but my understanding is that this is following on from Josh McAllister's review and the desire to get more frictionless information sharing. So what this is doing is it's providing a clear legal basis to share information for the purposes of safeguarding and the promotion of welfare. And very often safeguarding is perceived as child protection and not early intervention and prevention. So I think an element of this will support improving information sharing at that lower level of need, and also help to demystify some of the worries and concern about the common law duty which is placed upon people like health not to disclose information where it's been gathered in a confidential way. That causes a lot of confusion, particularly in the mass arrangements, and I think this legislation will go some way in trying to simplify those arrangements.
Yeah, it appears to be addressing some of the common reasons for people to not share information. Would that be a fair summary?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think what Josh McAllister said in his report was basically that people have self-imposed restraint on safeguarding information sharing, which does not need to be there, because the legislation does equip you already to share to a greater extent than we currently do. But culture has been difficult to break down. So I think the purpose of a piece of legislation is to totally make it clear that there is legal protection for organisations that are operating in this way.
Thanks for listening to this Research in Practice podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. Why not share with your colleagues and let us know your thoughts on Twitter? Tweet us at ResearchIP.